Fine Year by Errol Garner, Dave Brubeck, Duke Ellington, and for the final time, Django Reinhardt. I hope you have a beautiful day. You are tuned to Northern Community Radio 91.7 KAXE in Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 in Brainerd. And
this is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at kaxe.org. The Itasca County Family YMCA will be closed for plumbing work August 25th through the 27th. The outdoor courts will still be available. Brainerd Women of Today invite all ages to Chalk the Block Monday, August 25th from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Spread positivity by drawing or writing uplifting messages on Laurel Street. Meet at Passport Restaurant. The Central Lakes College Ag and Energy Research Center has its annual field day Friday, August 29th from 9 to 3 at their site in Staples. It's a day of hands-on demonstrations, education sessions, local food, and more. Find a full schedule at clcagandenergy.org/events.
Hi there, it's time for our weekly mix of words and music called Stay Human. I'm Michael Goldberg, and on today's show, we'll be spotlighting some very dangerous words. Words too explosive to be allowed on federal websites. Words so evil that they have to be red flagged if they dare to show up in any federal contracts or project proposals. Here are a few of them in a song cumbersomely titled, Trump just banned these seven words from the CDC, the song.
Vulnerable entitlement, diversity evidence-based, transgender fetus, science-based.
That song is from the Song A Day collection, a project started in the 20-teens by Canadian music producer Philip Weinrobe. He invites his songwriting friends to write a song a day every day for seven straight days and then to share them on a SoundCloud with 15 or 20 other musicians invited for that round. I don't know who composed Trump Just Banned These Seven Words from the CDC, the song, but it was back during the first Trump administration in response to a widely misreported story in the Washington Post in 2017. Actually, although the Post reported at the time that these words had been banned, they were really in a memo that was intended to be merely advice from CDC officials to research applicants about being strategic in seeking congressional funding. If a word will get a reflexive negative reaction, the advice went, use a substitute if there is one. That made sense to me at the time, since I spent years as a communications consultant selling similar advice. Be careful what you say, because you got to think about how the listener's going to hear it. And at the time, I was scornful of the media outlets misrepresenting what had happened in order to further outrage their readers. But that was way back in 2017. Now, it doesn't seem so ludicrous an overreaction, and I would be willing to admit it was a form of self-censorship, for all the good it did us. I remembered the incident recently because earlier this month I attended a really fun and inspiring event at our local taproom in Grand Rapids, Klocko Brewing. Andy and Tasha Klocko opened the place about the same time that CDC red flag words story came out at the end of 2017. When the COVID shutdown came, I asked them if they were concerned about the economic hit to the taproom. Oh, no, they said, our business plan has always been based on the retail sales. We just opened the taproom for fun to give folks a place to get together. And we sure have done that. People gather there for all kinds of occasions and activities, not to mention the daily random chance encounters. I was there last week for an art show at a brewery. It was artworks inspired by words that the current administration actually has scrubbed from federal websites or flagged for negative responses if included in federal contracts or programs. And nevertheless, everyone there seemed really glad to be there.
It's a shame that they have to do pop-up art because the government is so anti-everything that even words like biodiversity are unkosher.
Barriers. Racism? Peanut allergies? Air pollution.
That's just a few of the words on the list. Be careful what you say, especially if you work for the government of the United States or are hoping to get some federal money for the work that you do. Devin Allman, watch what you say.
Watch what you say. Words come down like a hurricane. I've been to blame. I know. Some memories stain. When you hurt someone, you carry their pain. Watch what you say. I know. With all the words we say and all the games we play, we most remember in the end we are on one. Give it time and space, bad times fade away. We must remember that real things come back around. Have you ever been played? Someone promised you something and walked away. I feel your pain. I know. Don't be a slave. Choose your words with love and grace. Watch what you say. I know. With all the words we say and all the games we play, we most remember.
This past month, two northern Minnesota artists who have not signed any grant contracts with the federal government created a series of works, 35 of them, displayed at Clockau Brewing, each one inspired by one of these apparently un-American words. The show was called Words as Buried Seeds. One of the artists was painter Terry Leinbach.
Kristen called me and asked if I'd do it. I think she'd seen a painting I did of Good Trouble. So I agreed and started looking at the lists. And the best example, well, there's many, but we can't say woman anymore. They want us to use childbearing adult. So I stared at these words for hours and hours, and just things came. One of my favorite was underappreciated. They're sort of hidden behind fences and gates and very small. I mean, I was a waitress for years. Talk about unappreciated. I'm around a lot of unappreciated people. Farmers, janitors, restaurant owners. And I thought COVID and the whole essential workers, but that seemed to go with everything else. Trauma. I'm looking at trauma now because it's right next to it. And that almost, that's upsetting. But I had put a picture of it up on a post, and a lot of people related to it. One of the most fun ones was I did a bookshelf for history and things like Our Bodies, Ourselves, Malcolm X, Schindler's List, The Color Purple, the things they carried. That was a fun one to put together. I mean, all these other words are part of history. They don't want to hear it. Don't even. Kristen and I wondered if at some point the whole crowd here would want to do a yell all together, just a scream. But someone asked us if doing this got it out of our systems. It may have. We'll see. We'll see.
That's Terry Leinbach from Black Duck, Minnesota. At the recent art show inspired by endangered words, coming up in this hour, we'll hear from the project's organizer, Kristen Anderson, and from some of the folks gathered at the event, and from John Bauer on how art builds connections and bonds us. First, here's something from Ani DeFranco, 32 Flavors.
Between you and your ambition, I am a poster girl with no poster. I am 32 flavors and then some, and I'm beyond your peripheral vision. So you might want to turn your head, cause someday you are gonna get hungry and eat most of the words you just said. My parents taught me about goodwill, and I have done well by their names. Just the kindness I lavished on strangers is more than I can explain. Still there's many who turned out their porch lights just so I would think they were not home, and hid in the dark of their windows till I passed and left them alone. God help you if you are an ugly girl, who's too pretty is also your doom. Cause everyone harbors a secret hatred for the prettiest girl in the room.
And God help you if you are a phoenix and you dare to rise up from the ash. A thousand eyes will smolder with jealousy while you are just flying bare. Try to give my life meaning by demeaning you. And I would like to state for the record, I did everything that I could do. I'm not saying that I am a saint, I just don't want to live that way. No, I will never be a saint, but I will always say, squint your eyes and look closer, and not between you and your ambition. I am a poster girl with no poster. I am 32 flavors and then some. And I'm beyond your peripheral vision. So you might want to turn your head, cause someday you might find you are starving and eating all of the words that you say.
Today on Stay Human, it's all about the power of language as interpreted by the current configuration of the American government. Part of its power, of course, is reflected in the opposition it generates, including the art show conceived by textile artist Kristen Anderson, who makes multi-layered felts. Much of her work lately has been inspired by the natural sciences. I asked her to tell me about the work on display.
I'm going to talk about advocacy, which has the two hand-like forms.
Yes, and you remember.
And the way that I've picked which word to create something I felt about was, I ran through this list, all of these words, and there's some of them that just sparked something for me that particular day in the studio, and I usually just kind of take some time, sketch, and then just get at it and start building the felt. And one of my goals was to keep these pretty abstract. But one of the other things is part of the felts. The word for each felt is embedded in the felt. And that's pretty important, actually. So if you flip them over, you can kind of see a shadow of them coming through, but they're seated in there, and that just became an important symbol for what they're about. And with felt, you know, there's you're building. It's like it's very sculptural while you're building it, and then when you're creating it, it turns into this textile. It turns into this flat thing, but it is very. It's kind of a lofty, big thing for a while before it's made into felt. So that was the time during that building phase to put that in there.
Kristen Anderson. You can find out more about her and her work at cardamomstudio.org. We'll hear more from her later in this hour.
Take a look outside. You can see that the whole damn world's on fire. When the world goes cold, the fire burns hot and the people are tired. Let them know where you stand. We could all just lie down on this land. We're in a castle in the sand that you could come and just knock down with your hand. Get up for something or you could fall for anything. No, this ain't no way to treat a human being, no. There's some people outside and they're feeling so tired. Things change, the more they seem to stay the same. Injustice was and is the fuse that feeds the flame. How long can history repeat itself? Lord, we need some help. Time to shovel these cards that we've been dealt and free ourselves. If you don't do something, you know nothing's gonna change. We're writing history, but everything.
People outside and they're feeling so tired, they've done had enough.
Galactic with Irma Thomas. Pop-up art show at Clocko Brewing was timed to coincide with a weekly gathering there, sometimes called Pints and Politics. A few citizens get together to make phone calls or write postcards to their elected representatives.
I'm writing them to the county commissioners to really talk about the library and the fact that it needs to be funded. And as a taxpayer, knowing that most of the tax money for Itasca is coming from Grand Rapids, it's ridiculous to think that they're not going to fund our library. So that's where my focus is right now.
And have you been to these Tuesday letter writing things?
No, haven't been able to. I'm on vacation this week. Usually I'm working. But it's awesome.
What you doing, Joel?
I'm wasting my time writing to Pete Stauber. He seems to be a stooge for Donald Trump instead of representing us. But I'm going to express my views anyway and hope that he maybe does something. I just feel that I have to do something. So I'm trying. This is my second postcard tonight to him, and this one's going to ask him to support statehood for Washington, D.C. That way it would not be legal for federal troops to come in and take over the district. So
we've been writing postcards for several months, I think it's been months, to our elected representatives, trying to voice our opposition to what's going on in Washington. And also on local issues, like trying to save the funding for our local library. So we're doing our job as citizens of the United States, trying to make our representatives understand they're supposed to represent us. Well, like everyone else, I get discouraged. And I also have made phone calls and give very few...
That was retired social studies teacher Frieda Hall practicing what she's taught. Our conversation got cut off by the commanding whistle of another retired teacher, Gail Otteson, asking folks in the group to give their attention to Kristen Anderson.
Flagged for denial of funds for all kinds of things federally. There's National Science Foundation grants, National Institute of Health money, you name it. So, of course, like many of us who may have heard about this, I was angry, outraged, frustrated, but I wanted to do something. I wanted to create something. And one of the things that kept going through my head was this interview I'd heard on NPR a while ago. And they were interviewing the two writers from SNL who were during the first administration. And they said, what was that like to write at that time? When, did the skits just write themselves? And what their response was kind of lives rent-free in my head. They said it was like taking a little poison every time we went to work. And I think we all feel that when we read the news and that sort of thing. And this show when I saw those words, I thought, this is about, yes, being angry, but also having the space to celebrate the importance, the life within these words, the beauty within these words. And like seeds that are living, if we give them care, light, witness, they flourish. And this is their time for that. This is their time to be seen. And so thank you so much for being here. So Terry and I have priced our work, I would say, pretty low. And the intention is anything over the minimum is going to go to the Union of Concerned Scientists Emergency Fund that has been set up. There's information on two sheets at either end of the table. There's a QR code if you want to go to the website. So that's happening as well. So thank you. And it, you know, if you don't want to buy art, at least donate to that wonderful organization or learn more about what they're doing. Anyway, it's a time for thank you. Thanks to Klockow, thanks to Gail, and then thanks to the fabulous Terry Leinbach for being her awesome self with all the energy and encouragement. I think I can speak on behalf of Terry when I say buy some beer, write some letters, buy some art, support a great organization, and by all means, make some good trouble. Thank you for coming.
I just want to encourage you to come over to this table, take time to write one postcard. We have postcards, we have stamps, we have addresses for Klobuchar and Smith and Pete Stauber. And there are about five or six things that the Union of Concerned Scientists has requested that we contact elected officials about. We have them listed over here. You can just copy it down or say whatever you want. Anyway, help yourselves.
A lot of postcards went out that day, and every piece of artwork was sold, and they raised over $1,700 to donate to the Union of Concerned Scientists Emergency Fund. That's the power of concerned citizens.
Turned around, and I
You're tuned to independent KAXE KBXE, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music and events, news and conversation. We broadcast with the permission of the Federal Communications Commission, and the service streams, no permission needed so far, at KAXE.org, where you can also find local news stories, playlists, podcasts, and more. On today's edition of Stay Human, we're featuring a local response to federal linguistic policy, Words to Watch Out For. One of the friends I met up with at that event was longtime KAXE staffer John Bauer. He and I visited at the studios a few days later.
I had the opportunity to go this past week to a show called Words as Seeds Buried, and it was put on by Kristen Anderson and Terry Leinbach. And it was Kristen Anderson's wool abstract art and Terry Leinbach's painting. And I was a little bit late at arriving, and it was packed. And it was people, it was almost like people were in a frenzy. They loved the art. It was displayed beautifully. But everybody was in kind of a frenzy to read the words that you can't use anymore, see the wonderful art that's displayed. And it was just a warm feeling of everybody having conversations. It was amazing. And I think that's what we talk about. You know, you build community through art. That was the poster child right there. It was truly amazing. And the side conversations and bringing, and I think we brought together people of like minds, but I don't think everybody knew each other. And boy, by the time they left, they knew each other. I had strangers coming up to me, talking to me and expressing their feelings on it. And it was pretty amazing. And then another thing is, I think back in 2017, I did an exhibit called What's Left? Lives Touched by Suicide. Touched by Suicide, because I lost my daughter to suicide. And it was an event that was created to have individuals, artists, 55 creative artists from Minnesota, some of the finest, to put a piece together that depicted either their feelings on mental health or describing their experiences that they had with mental health troubles. We all know somebody that struggles. And the event was very powerful. There were so many people there. And it created a community, it created knowledge of the issue of mental health. People are kind of don't want to talk about that type of issue. It's kind of forbidden. There's a stigma surrounding it. But boy, that night, if anything was accomplished, it was people getting together and better understanding the issues involved with mental health. And that has only grown since then. And I'm not like tooting my horn, but that was one of that was one of the biggest accomplishments that has ever happened to me. It created this awareness, and it created an awareness that this can happen to anybody. And it created a community that still continues. And we're talking like, you know, 10 years. That's a community I'm proud of. And it was because of art. I mean, I'm going to ramble. These were people that created a piece that expressed their feelings about mental health. It was therapy for each one of these artists. So the artists that I asked to create a piece have never been in a situation like that, been asked to do something, and it was like their own individual therapy session. It depicted their feelings. Well, they may have lost someone, they may have struggled themselves, and it kind of allowed them to break the stigma around it by using art. And it was a personal therapy session for them. It was a beautiful thing. And man, everybody that looked at those pieces, you could just feel it tugging at their heartstrings. And so when I think of how art builds a community, I don't necessarily think about it as how much money it brings into community. I think about just the vibe it creates and just continues to grow. Because those people that were at my exhibit, or these people that were at the exhibit Words as Buried Seeds, went home and they're going to talk to somebody else about it. And they're going to talk to somebody else about it. And I think that's like just a large, large community.
That's John Bauer, co-host with Heidi Holton on our Friday morning show. In his retirement, John has taken up his own artwork.
Currently, I'm making sculptures out of found objects, and it's created a community of junk collectors who are now working together to supply me with an overwhelming amount of junk, some things that I can't use, but it is interesting. I had this exhibit, And people ask, well, where did you get this? And well, how did you get this? And how do you find this stuff? And I don't have an answer for them. But what has happened is it has morphed into this community of people who look through their garages and their basements and they find things that they don't need. But they now know they have a source in me, which sometimes is good and sometimes bad. Case in point this week when somebody came up from the Bemidji area with four boxes of steel junk and offered it to me and I had to carry it. We had to have assistance to carry it, put it in my truck. I got home, took me an hour and a half to go through all this junk, and I think I found out I had five pieces, but that's wonderful, but sometimes it's a problem. So in this box of junk, boxes of junk I received from this anonymous Bemidji donor, I went through and I found some remnants of old darts. So the wings and stuff were gone in these darts. But here's how it works with me. These darts are cool. They're long and they're narrow and they've got patina on them. And then they got that rusted point that enters the dartboard. But then I quickly grab a drill with a wire brush on it. And I can make that rusty old dart the most beautiful thing in the world. And sometimes I make things that I keep the patina and want it to look old, but sometimes things that are so unattractive can be so beautiful with just a battery and a brush, and it's just, it changes the world. And I don't necessarily, when I see those darts sitting there on my tailgate when it's 80 degrees out and I'm going through these boxes, I don't necessarily see something. I don't see where it's going to go because I never start with an idea. I end with an idea. And I know those are going to go in a sculpture soon.
Motor cars, handlebars, bicycles for two, broken hearted Jew. Parachutes, army blues, sleeping bags for two, sentimental jamboree.
Affordable housing.
Lesbian. Microplastics.
Racism.
Injustice.
Victims.
Pronouns.
Climate science.
That's a few more of the words that the federal government is consigning to the junk pile, but others are turning into works of art. The Words as Buried Seeds art show was scheduled for a Tuesday afternoon because that's when citizens have been getting together every week from 3:30 to 5 to exercise their citizenship. The project was started by Gail Otteson. I asked her where she got the idea and how she's kept it going.
When COVID hit in 2020, a bunch of us every Wednesday would bring lawn chairs and sit out in the parking lot in front of Klocko. And it was so supportive getting through a hard time to just be with friends again and to laugh and have a beer and do our usual thing, that when the administration changed last November and a lot of us did not like the changes, I thought, you know what, it's really a lot of fun to get together at Klocko and have a beer. and let's do political work. I didn't care if one other person came or, you know, 40 came. Well, it turned out after about a month of just doing this that about 40 people came. Some people came just to be trained to use an app called Five Calls that gives you issues, how to articulate, and how to call people, elected officials, to talk about something that was bothering you. And then they went home to do that work instead of in Clarko. But there's a core group of about 12 or 15 people who just really enjoy each other's company every week and seem to do that work better as a group, to talk with each other and laugh and have a beer or a kombucha, you know. And I make cookies every single week. And, you know, a few people, I think, come just for the cookies. I send pictures of cookies every Monday that I'm going to be bringing on Tuesday, and sort of a rundown of let's work on this week or whatever, you know, sharing ideas. But I always include a picture of the cookies because few of them look for the cookies the minute they get there. But here's the funny thing about Clarko. If we have any cookies left, I go around to the regulars in the bar and give them a chocolate chip cookie or give a dog a biscuit. It's sort of that kind of thing. And I swear, if sometime in the next 4 years, the guys who are sitting at the bar every Tuesday are going to start writing postcards with us, I'm sure. So here's the cool development about being with the same people through demonstrations, through different issues, through sign making, is that when this art event was, before it was going to happen, Kristen came to me and said, I've got this idea, but I wanted to have it, have the art opening at Clarko at the same time you're writing postcards, because she liked that collaboration. So this has sort of been the peak of everything we've done so far, and it was so exciting to get like 75 people coming in looking at this really gorgeous art, but then coming over to the tables that we pushed together and provided stamps and addresses and postcards and whatever people needed, taught them how to use the app. And by the end of 90 minutes, you know, we had 100 postcards to drop off in the mailbox. And the expansion of our issues, actually, it's the bringing, making the federal issues that we're writing about, bringing those home. We're doing a lot of local work right now that is very gratifying because we see more immediate change and effects based on, you know, nurturing the democracy that happens right in your own community. So it's been, it's a wonderful experience. And I don't know where it's going to go. But more and more people know about this little pocket in Clarko, and I think that's encouraging other people to get involved in whatever way, you know, do what you can. And this is what we're doing.
That's Gail Addison. Make America Great Again.
To a weapon or a drug, you can be the outcast or be the backlash of somebody's lack of love, or you can start speaking up. Nothing's gonna hurt you the way the words do when they settle near your skin, kept on the inside and no sunlight. Sometimes a shadow wins, but I wonder what would happen if you say what you want.
I wanna see you.
Sarah Bareilles with her song Brave. Thanks to Gail Addison, not just for Pints and Politics, but also for pitching in as the Stay Human in-house musicologist. Gail mentioned that when she first invited friends to get together to make phone calls and write postcards, she was remembering the lockdown summer of 2020 when COVID suddenly put everything in focus. And it has occurred to me more than once that 2025 has some similarities to 2020. For one thing, you can't take anything for granted, and no one can say what'll happen next. And for another thing, individually, we all are finding our own ways to adapt to the new reality. And for a lot of us, that's included finding ways to stay in touch with the people we care about. There are some differences between COVID and now, of course. In 2025, there's not much chance of a vaccine being developed. And though a lot of us did a lot of reading in lockdown, that could get harder in the months and years ahead, unless you've got your own personal library. Last May, I spoke to writer and editor Brett Ortler after I read a piece he published in the Minnesota Reformer about the school in his hometown, St. Francis, Minnesota. When Book Bans Hit Home, Brett Ortler.
It's happening here, when book bans hit home. If you're a reader, a student of history, or a writer, it's been appalling to watch book bans proliferate. As the Minnesota Reformer reported in March, the Independent School District 15 School Board recently adopted a policy that effectively bans or prevents the purchase of hundreds of books, including classic novels, Nobel Prize-winning authors, and a myriad of incredibly popular recent fiction titles. Now, chances are you haven't heard of Independent School District 15. Minnesota has something like 327 school districts, and ISD 15 is tucked past the northern fringes of the much larger Anoka-Hennepin School District, ISD 11, the state's largest. ISD 15 ranges from portions of Andover in the south to Nowthen, Oak Grove, St. Francis, Bethel, and East Bethel in the north. The city of St. Francis is home to the district's only high school, St. Francis High School. Its mascot, a bit incongruous for a public school, the Fighting Saints. In many respects, it's a pretty but ordinary place. Once rural, but now ex-urban, rye and soybean fields give way to housing developments named after the features they displaced. The Rum River, on its route from Mille Lacs Lake to Anoka, winds through the heart of the district, passing half a mile due west from the high school on the aptly named Bridge Street. In summer, the river is popular with bass fishermen and busloads of tubers. In winter, the river ice is tattooed with tracks from perhaps ill-advised snowmobile ventures. When things go well, most of a school district's work is unremarkable and almost anonymous. If you've ever attended a school board meeting, the agendas alone will make it clear that it's essential but thankless work. But sometimes school districts make the news, and when they do, it's often for a bad reason. That brings us back to ISD 15. Late last year, ISD 15 adopted a policy that defers to the website BookLooks to determine which books should be removed from library shelves and to guide future book buying decisions. The policy is simple enough to describe. BookLooks is a website linked to the far-right group Moms for Liberty. The anonymous reviews use a handful of cherry-picked, out-of-context quotes to produce a book rating on a scale of 1 to 5. Under the policy that ISD 15 adopted, any book rated 3 or higher is pulled from the shelves, and future purchases of that title are forbidden. The result? Stacks of books on library carts that students can no longer check out, and a list of many other titles, including beloved classics, that will soon likely join them. The so-called book reviews on BookLooks are anonymous, arbitrary, and crucially, under the ISD 15 policy, unchallengeable. Weirder yet, the BookLooks policy is still in force, despite the fact that all of the reviews on BookLooks were removed all of a sudden last month. Nonetheless, for would-be censors, they are easy to access via the likes of the Internet Archive. I graduated from St. Francis High School in 2001. I owe much of my career as a writer, I've written 10 books and edited many more, to one of the soon-to-be-banned books. It was Slaughterhouse-Five. It was the year 2000. Spike tips and Billabong shirts were everywhere. I picked it up from a book rack in my journalism class. That teacher was the best teacher I ever had. I absorbed it, and I proceeded to read every other book by Vonnegut on the rack. Soon, I was reading Sylvia Plath and Richard Wright and a host of others. A good book is a springboard to others. The best books lead to a lifetime of reading. Hundreds of books are now either banned outright or will be pulled from the shelves in the near future. This includes classics like A Handmaid's Tale, The Bluest Eye, and soon, perhaps the likes of Night by Elie Wiesel and Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut. Slaughterhouse-Five is a fictionalized story that, like all truly great fiction, is at its heart true. Vonnegut was a GI in World War II and was captured during the Battle of the Bulge. To put that another way, the St. Francis School Board wants to ban a novel written by an American serviceman and a member of the Greatest Generation. Vonnegut was forced to do manual labor in Dresden, and he survived the U.S. Air Force's firebombing of the city in February 1945, which killed something like 20,000 to 40,000 people. Slaughterhouse-Five is superficially science fiction, but it's really about the insanity of war, surviving, and PTSD. Vonnegut's writing will last forever because he's irreverent, funny, and accessible, but he's also honest and fundamentally decent. That's why Vonnegut appeals to younger readers. Kids aren't just picky eaters, they are pickier readers. You have to meet them where they are in terms of attitude, interest, and style. By removing some of the most popular books among young people, classics and newer books alike, the district is depriving students of great books, but also the love of reading and learning itself. And I can't help but wonder how a book that was available in the district for the better part of 20 years suddenly became objectionable. Did the book change, or did we? And it's doubly strange that the district thinks that a book about war and everything that comes with it is too much for high school students who are eligible for, or nearly so, service in the armed forces. As a rule, if you're banning books, you're afraid of ideas. The Soviets were afraid of capitalism, religion, and freedom of speech. The Nazis loathed the Jews, modernism in all its forms, and were racist to their core. The Inquisition banned or targeted works by Copernicus and Galileo and Giordano Bruno because they feared evidence that challenged doctrine. The ideas that booklooks and, by extension, the St. Francis School Board fears are plain. Even the most cursory look at its ratings show that the books it targets the most are by women, black people, Jewish people, gays, lesbians, trans folks, or people who have a different point of view. Like any attempt at censorship, it's an exercise in erasure and an attempt to gain a monopoly on ideas. But I can promise you this, it won't work. As the packed school board meetings, recent student protests, and a pair of newly filed lawsuits against the district make clear, people care about the freedom to read, the First Amendment, and the books and characters they love. But more than anything, opponents of book bans care about their kids, their communities, and they want books in school libraries that reflect the wide variety of perspectives, identities, and ideas found in the real world. I have a suspicion that is what St. Francis and booklooks are afraid of most.
Thanks for tuning in to Stay Human. I'm Michael Goldberg, back this time next week with another hour of words and music for spirit and courage. This week, my thanks to Kristen Anderson, Terry Leinbach, Gail Addison, John Bauer, Brett Ortler, and to a cast of thousands, including Barry, Patty, Carolyn, Paula, Elliot, Beth, Frida, Joel, Teresa, and Tom. Say what you want, friends. Be brave and stay human.
Be me.
This is not a
Well, the world seems spent, and the president
has no good idea of who the masses are.
I'm one of them, and I'm among friends.
We're trying to see beyond the fences in our own backyard.
I've seen the kingdoms blow like ashes in the winds of change.
Yeah, but the power of truth is the fuel for the flame.
So the darker the ages get,
vision stays clear.